guys gather around. David has a poetry reading.
Dear Max and Caleb, we begin this podcast with an audio recording without a bottom, carving two friend trails in the sky.
Oh, chemtrails?
This
took a weird political turn.
Also, my arm hurts and I got in a car crash. Welcome to the Crit Crew.
I was wondering if you're going to do a car crash comedy.
We've been dead this whole time?
We've been dead this whole time. Guys, oh, it is a podcast about Dear Esther.
It is a podcast about the Sixth Sense.
A game that we will surely have a lot to say about, and none of it about the game.
More of the genre than
more of the genre. It's more of an artisanal genre.
Welcome to my artisanal genre sampling.
I mean, saying we're a podcast about art is just a step away from sounding like that.
Guys, join me for my charcuterie plate with wine pairings.
All right,
and clean pumpkin slices.
Clean pumpkins, just in time for the hot summer.
Yep. So let me explain this game to anyone who's not familiar with it, so you can participate in this lovely discussion we're about to have. So I think by now, if you're listening, you understand what a walking simulator is. And guys, this one's a walking simulator. Real good. You wake up essentially on an island, and it's really hard to explain this game because it is
so obtuse.
It's very obtuse. Like, the dialogue is all very poetic. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, I pulled up the script just so you guys can sort of see what I'm talking about. This is one of the first lines you can get in the game. Dear Esther, I sometimes feel as if I've given birth to this island. Somewhere between the longitude and latitude, a split opened up and it beached remotely here. No matter how hard I correlate, it remains a singularity, an alpha point in my life that refuses all hypotheses. So that's what the prose is.
Quite dense.
So ignoring that, essentially you're just like walking through this like deserted island, and you slowly piece together, at least this was my playthrough. I know it changes a little bit every time and it's open to interpretation. In my playthrough, you kind of learned this guy lost his wife in a car crash, and he's sort of trying to come to terms with that grief as he, you know, goes through the island and talks about the last moments and their memories together. Mm-hmm. And all throughout there's this, like, an aerial, like this radio tower off in the distance, and you're slowly getting closer to that. And that by the end of the game, you throw yourself off of it, but, like, halfway down, you sort of, like, start to float and you like pull up right before you hit the land and you see like the shadow of a bird beneath you. Mm-hmm. And you just sort of like fly off into the like darkness, and that's the game.
And there's also like leading up to that moment, would you feel like halfway through is that cave area where you're kind of like,
that's the third chapter
out of four.
Fourth.
Yeah, that's like you're piecing together this poetry, trying to figure out what potentially has happened in sort of in this cave area. You get to a point where there's this giant hole, and you jump through the hole, and you expect to go into a body of water, but then it ends up being,
you know,
this,
like you would.
You know, or like just a vast black hole. Somehow we're in space. And then you ultimately end up in this large expanse of the car crash. And you can kind of see that environment come to life, and then it sort of takes on the rest of the narrative from there. And for listeners, this is from the Chinese Game Room. They have developed another game called Everyone Has Gone to the Rapture, which is another walking simulator that is very heavy on prose. And, you know, well, I'm sure we will talk about just the state of walking simulators throughout this discussion.
Yeah, definitely.
That is sort of their strength, is sort of telling a narrative through environmental storytelling.
Right, and Dear Esther's actually had two different forms now. It was remade and remastered. And they're remastering, basically they made it read a little better in terms of walking, and then added a whole lot more dialogue and a whole lot, like, and I think longer audio loops, which when you hear that as a priority, you know, like, ambience is the priority here. I mean, if they're adding in, if they're making it so it flows better, but then they're just like, yeah, more dialogue and longer music.
So I think I would like to cover all the things we think about this game that aren't about it being a walking simulator, so we can just like get really into that discussion later.
Okay.
And one thing I will say is that the design is pretty gorgeous, both the audio and the actual environments that you're in.
The sound that they use is so nice. The music is great. The dialogue is great. The narrator is great. All the writing is so great. Great, 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 great.
I mean, the writing is good. Like, it's very beautiful, like, prose. However, I feel like sometimes it felt a little bit like it was, like, trying to be... Like you said, Caleb, it felt like it was trying to be obtuse for the sake of being obtuse.
Right.
Granted, there was one moment, like, near the end, like, I just thought, like, okay, this guy just wants to... It's like Charles Dickens getting paid by the word, so that's what we're doing here. but there's this one, like, so throughout... it is very heavy on symbolism. Mm. Whether you're actually able to interpret the meaning or not is another thing. But, like, there are just, like, different art assets that are, like... There are paint cans all over the place. There are white lines on the rock. You see these, like, weird, like, glowing carvings of, like, chemical structures and circuits carved into the wall. And I felt like it was just, like... It had deep personal meaning to, like, the developer, but you're never going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But at the end, as you're, like, sort of, like, in the, like, the highest point of your grief, you're, like, there are 21 species of gulls in this island, 21 circuits and an anti-lock brake. We're, like, on our 22nd mile outside of this place before the crash. It cannot be a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, okay, so this is just, like, sort of showing, like, the narrator's, like, obsessed state of mind trying to, like, come to terms with his grief. And that was a really good payoff.
Oh, yeah.
But well, I don't know that it...
So you have to get incredibly invested yourself in order to get that payoff, because nothing is explicitly told to you. And that's something I appreciate, but as your first go-around, when you're sort of hit with the poetry of it all, it's easy to get lost in making sense of that and sort of feeling as if you need to figure that out and pay less attention to the environment, which ultimately it's beautiful, and I think they do what they can with it, especially when it came out, the limitations, but it is kind of drab. There's not a lot of vibrancy to the world, and I think it feels very much like a Unity game that has potential to be something more that I think they actually, when taking their time, i.e. everyone has gone to the Rapture, they can create something that is a little more vibrant and engages you visually, less so in Dear Esther.
I would argue that, like, it wasn't particularly visually engaging, but I felt that very much, like, fit the tone. Like, you're on this, like, something that's, like, that I was thinking about. Like, it's a beach, which, you know, like, kind of a beach. You know, you're on a cliff.
It's actually...
shore.
There is actually a specific location in reality that it's based on.
Right, but I don't know how to pronounce that word, so I was avoiding it.
I have an easier word for you. Scottish Isle.
Okay, that'll work.
the island is a Scottish Isle. It's, you know, a rocky, misty...
And I like that choice of environment, because, you know, when you think, like, a cliffside by the ocean, it sounds very beautiful, but, like, you know, like, the sand is dirty, and, like, there's, like, grass pockets, like, popping in and out of places. There are a bunch of, like, wrecked boats and, like, rust, and, like, for, like, a place that should be beautiful, it almost looks, like, disused and decaying, which I felt... It doesn't create, like, the most attractive place to look at, but it very much fit the message of the game.
And you also see, like, the wreckage of tires and a torn car door in a place where there's clearly no roads to be driving. So they sort of plant those art assets well ahead of time that it kind of sticks with you. You look at it and you think, even the, like, Fibonacci sequence that is carved in the sand is a little... so out of place that you kind of commit to memory. So they do a good job with the assets that they have.
It's nice that you're walking around a wrecked island with the narrative of a person that has been killed in a wreck.
Yeah.
Though, I mean,
there's something
very poetic
about that.
Right. Another thing that, like, sort of comes out in the script after reading story things, this game is highly interpretive, like, and, like, the way
and
I interpret it, like,
it varies too.
Yeah, like, the way I saw it, like, the narrator lost his wife, but if you read other people that think, like, played this game, they don't think the narrator exists. They think one character like one name is two different people based on like different things. They think this person doesn't exist. Like, it is really hard to say what this game is about.
I fall into the camp to think the narrator is a concept as less than a character. And the dialogue, I mean, I don't know exactly how much the different, what's it called? I mean, essentially it's poetry. The different poetry passages. I don't know how much they change from playthrough to playthrough. I know that's an aspect of the game. That you're going to get different. And that's actually, that's sort of a comment I had on, you know, the sort of broad picture some of the early dialogue has. I wonder if that's sort of where there's more variation, so they have to be a little more broad. Because you can't be too specific if your dialogue changes with each playthrough.
Yeah, I was reading up on what actually is varied, and I think it's just placement of art assets. I think that it, like, the environment will subtly change. Like, you might see wreckage near the sandy shore, but then in another playthrough, it'll be off in the distance somewhere. I think it's just all visual from what
I know that there's audio because the updated version they added more passages.
Reading from that selection, that was one of four possible openings.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's fine. I think there's more variation at the beginning and less at the end, which makes sense if the end is sort of about hitting a conclusion. You'd want the conclusion to be more concise.
Mm-hmm. So I'll ask you guys this just because I think it'd be an interesting discussion. If like this varies so much, the point isn't to have a crystal clear understanding of this game and tell the story. What do you think is the point? Like, what do you think is like the overall like message or takeaway or experience that you're supposed to learn from this?
So for me specifically, I mean, it is more of this introspective journey. You're there kind of to reflect on what is available and what is around. And for me, that is really the point. It is, you can piece together a narrative if you want, if you really are that engaged with it, but I think it is trying to, you know, I have my issues with this game, but I think the Chinese Game Room has an understanding of why this medium is important, and they're allowing you an opportunity to sort of just breathe and take in various elements and just kind of figure out what you want to do with it. To me, that's sort of the point.
Yeah, there's a sense of like obscurity to it. Everything's sort of veiled. I kind of have this like underlying feeling of like, especially like sort of just listening to different dialogue. It makes you feel like you're sort of listening to someone else's self-reflection. The musings of somebody else. That was kind of how I felt about it. There's like this sort of simultaneous similarity to the... it's hard to tell like what the actual controlled character is in context.
I still can't decide if the game would have been better if it was a clear story. That's probably like a whole other discussion that I don't know that we have time or interest for. But I agree with you guys. I think this game, to me, it was overall about coming to terms with grief and learning to, you know, accept people that aren't with you anymore. Mm-hmm. That seemed to be the overall thing. Go ahead.
I wonder if the, what's it called? The phrasing of the dialogue and, you know, the phrasing of the language and just the general indirect tone of things sometimes. I wonder if that's there just to sort of facilitate conversation. And that's sort of one of the underlying, you know, I sort of feel coming away from it like it's a conversation piece at times.
Right.
You know, it's something for people to analyze.
Much as art is, guys. It's a conversation.
But it's something which isn't, it's not direct and spelling things out, so it sort of takes conversation to sort of reach a...
I was also going to say, much like this coffee table, it's a conversation piece. Dear Esther, the coffee table of video games.
Dear Esther, I went to IKEA, it's pretty dope.
I mean, you take these pieces and you assemble it how you want, you know?
Yeah, exactly how you want. There's no rules, just right.
No rules at all.
IKEA. Did you guys know there are ghosts in this game?
Yeah. Not on my playthrough or anything. Sort of looking at videos to get sort of caught up. There were little, just off in the distance, just silhouettes of ghosts.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know what that adds. I just thought it was a cool fact.
I mean, the game's aesthetic environment is so eerie that...
Mm-hmm.
I would describe the Dear Esther's aesthetic environment as gray.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's got some brown in there.
Well, no. I mean, just sort of, and I'm not saying...
gray, brown, and gray, green.
I say gray, and Caleb makes a Dirty. Face like I'm giving it a criticism. I think that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, it definitely works.
Do you know what color Scottish Isles are?
Oh, boy.
Gray. They're real gray.
Oh, boy.
But it's very, like, it's... Yeah, I actually find aesthetically it's nice. I mean, it's very... It's subtle, which is a game... Which is a thing which applies to very few games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one incorporates subtlety.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, actually, I do want to go back to what I said. Do you guys think this game would have been better if it was a straightforward story?
No. Yes.
Oh, this is interesting.
I absolutely. Having played Everyone Has Gone to the Rapture, yes. I fully believe you need something to ground yourself. But to give it context... This game set the precedent for this specific genre, and it led to a lot of innovation, a lot of iteration, too, to create something that was a little more streamlined. So games like Gone Home, especially, which had a very straightforward narrative, and you sort of exploring just this house environment. I think for me, I'm very much driven by an authoritative narrative. Having something okay. that has a through line that not necessarily has beats per se, but you can see the end goal at the very end. For me, it would have been a little more powerful if there was a set story here. So that's just my preference.
Why do you say yes, Max?
I said no.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Why'd you say it should be obtuse?
I like it as obtuse. I think, in keeping in context, the original like kind of first draft of this game is 2008. The original release 2012.
Mm-hmm. We've played a lot of games that started out as a small mod.
Yeah. And
developed into something different.
And actually, they did really do a good job on improving that small mod and making it into something much more successful. But I think that, you know, at the time there weren't a whole lot of walking simulators. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to make a claim like it would be more successful, less successful. I think the obscurity keeps it. I don't know. At the time, it keeps it as something to talk about. If it mm-hmm. just has an ending, then I feel like maybe it would have been harshly received. But I don't know for sure.
See, I think I land somewhere in the middle of you two. I think that it. My interpretation of this game is that the story is not the most important part, and it's just more sort of like the messages you're trying to get and like the feeling of loneliness and stuff like that. But I do wonder if, see, I kind of go back and forth because I feel like in a way by making the narrative so mysterious and hard to piece together, it almost becomes the more fascinating part,
mm-hmm.
and it sort of takes away from what you should be focusing on and turns it into, I want to figure out what happened.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, go ahead, Max.
Well, I was going to say it doesn't that drives your exploration. The game's intent is to explore. So without something to drive your exploration, it doesn't have a purpose.
That's the thing is like for being such an innovative title, they really do set a good foundation for the rest of these games to sort of follow suit. And it's if it is about ambiguity and. Sort of you as a player figuring things out on your own, you know, it's helping to set a tone for walking simulators going forward. And that is something to commend. Regardless of how I feel about this game, it is something to commend.
So unless there's something else about this you wanted to talk about, is it time for us to move into walking simulator chat?
Well,
our hit new segment.
Guys, pick up if you're listening on your iPhones or iPads or whatever, pick them up. Get off your lazy ass and let's go walk.
Walking.
We're gonna take a journey. Walk.
We're gonna simulate walking.
We're gonna simulate walking.
I'm gonna stimulate your walking.
I was just about to start just doing walking sounds. I'm like, that's
I was just about to. But I'd have to get and anyway.
I will say to start this off, I think during the Stanley Parable episode, I said that was sort of like the banner child of modern walking simulators. And I would add an asterisk to that where, as far as I know, Dear Esther is the one that sort of kicked off modern versions of walking simulators. But I do think that Stanley Parable is the best one we have, at least out of everything that I'm familiar with.
I think I'm
pretty or at least the first one to really get it right.
I think that's the thing with Stanley Parable is that it innovates that. It innovates the genre in a nice way. And it does something with walking simulator.
That's the thing is like the Stanley Parable has multiple directions it wants to lead you. It's very anti-narrative in that way. Whereas Dear Esther is, well, I mean, I would also say a little anti-narrative. It's you kind of figuring things out. But the Stanley Parable has so many different directions it wants to take you that it's sort of up to the player and their experimentation with the environment to kind of see those different points.
Dear Esther's relevance to walking simulators is kind of, it exists.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like,
it's the godfather.
It needed to happen.
It's the old grandpa in a chair watching his grandchildren play thinking, go, my sons and daughters.
be one with the ocean.
It's interesting to discuss something which kind of, like, innovates in that way, where it's like, well, this is granddaddy. Like, this is the,
What's really cool, though, is that we've talked about the Stanley Parable, we've talked about the Beginner's Guide, and we have this conversation of what does this contribute to the conversation of games as art. We're at the tail end of looking at a genre that we sort of explored in previous episodes and looking at like the genesis of it and sort of looking at its lasting impact, which is kind of cool that it worked out like that. Good planning, guys.
This game definitely had a huge impact on me. Very much like Thomas Was Alone, this came in Humble Bundle 8, which I think for me that was like a pretty, like, that one just introduced me to a lot of games that I never like really thought could exist. Like, again, before that I was just playing like TF2, Left 4 Dead, and that was it. Like, that was pretty much what I played most of the time. I'm like, okay, so these are different experiences. I didn't know video games could be like that. So I think, yeah.
Well, it was like around that time. I mean, we had that conversation with Thomas Was Alone and sort of that like drive to have indie experiences that were better facilitated on consoles that had this emergent digital market. That was also happening on the PC because you had platforms like Unity sort of taking off and being a no barrier to entry. So you could have these games like Dear Esther that had a crew of maybe 2 to 3 people, and it had a very clear intention and could be released and iterated on, like Max was saying, with revisions kind of down the line. So in that side of things, like, that was the beginning of these sort of like more independent voices in gaming.
So with all that preface, I wanted to talk about some of the problems I had with this game, and something that I ran into a couple times, is that, you know, as you would be walking through this island, like, there'd be like a little, like, the narrator would say something, and some of the times it felt like it was meant to indicate like a present action. Like, you would come across like this abandoned house, and the narrator would talk about like, so I lived in this house for a couple days and I tried to explore it. But you're not actually seeing that happen. Like, it almost feels like you're being, like, it just felt like it should connect with what you're doing. Like, you would say things that meant, like, it was to reflect what you're doing at this moment, but you never see it happen because there's no interactivity in this game. So, which, like, makes me wonder, like, would this game be better as, like, an ebook or something? Does this, like, add to the game or, like, seriously take away from it? Like,
and that's can this something
be called a game?
That's something in Everybody Has Gone to the Rapture. They remedy that. As you're walking through these environments, you see this sort of celestial light that you kind of, like, use your controller to line up. And through that, these, like, light ethereal forms reenact the scene, and it's there for maybe 10 to 15 seconds. It feels like a little mini stage play. You get the story beat in that environment, and then they sort of just disappear into nothingness. So I think they're aware of that with Dear Esther, and sort of that was their solution going forward with that next game. And I thought it was really successful in that regard.
That's interesting. I haven't played Everyone's Gone to the Rapture yet.
So good.
But it's it's interesting sort of that I mean, because at the same time, that is a gameplay element, but it's still a very obscure sounding element. So it sounds like they've managed to sort of continue the obscurity. Because I mean, that is inherently, that's a pretty noticeable quality of the whole game.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even call it obscurity. It just like made me sort of like stop and wonder what I was doing. Where like I'm walking this island, I'm like, okay, I'm not doing anything, but I'm experiencing this story. And then the story is also removed from the fact that I am playing. Like I am literally just walking through some pretty scenery while someone reads to me. And I don't know how I feel about the fact that technically, other than like being the one that is like playing the game, you really don't matter in like the most extreme sense possible.
There's a further question.
Uh-oh.
How many games do you matter? How many games do you matter?
Okay.
Well, Call of Duty is the only thing that matters, and you are.
Yeah, I don't know if that was Call of Duty.
I don't. The only game where your character matters is Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, at the very end, you get a gun slid over to you, and then you pick it up and you shoot Kevin Spacey out a window.
But I mean, that is sort of a further question on the whole thing. I would
say most of them.
I feel like you matter in most games. Absolutely.
You have a face that tells me you're about to disagree, though.
Sometimes I feel like if you really analyze it, you matter in fewer games than you think.
I don't know about that.
Maybe, but there are also a lot of games.
If you think... Oh, yeah, exactly. But if you think about the number of games where you have a protagonist that occupies space but has seemingly no relevance on the space, it does happen.
I mean, I'm trying to think of them.
Quite a bit.
And
I can't do this right now.
You want to have this conversation?
I don't.
I mean, like, you say that about Undertale, and even if, like, the character you're playing doesn't occupy in the story, like, you still are, in like, the gameplay still requires your input. Like, you come to the minigames for combat, inputting, like, the dialogue to move that along.
Your input matters, but your character does not.
Your character in Halo
most certainly does not matter. You are a surrogate that
drives the
plot.
You're there to just facilitate the next plot point. But in a game like Halo Reach, like what is the plot essentially? You can also look at the extreme, both being AAA action titles, something like an Uncharted. You know, you're Nathan Drake. You're very much pivotal to the plot. But you're also there to sort of facilitate the next point. And oftentimes, a cutscene you're playing through, which is cool. You're not even removed from that story element. You're sort of actively participating in it.
With Halo Reach, you can at least argue that the gameplay matters because you are like interacting with the environment. Like it doesn't necessarily further the story, but you are actually having an influence on what is happening in the game, i.e., killing things. In this, you are just like the story and nothing else. Like it, you don't have any
reel
impact
it back.
On
reel
it
back, David.
My question was going to be, what happens when the gameplay is walking? You have Dear Esther.
Right, and,
well,
and
you
that's
got me there, huh? Thank you for helping
do
me work
matter.
Through that.
the thing is, like in this game, you are not, unlike a Halo Reach, you are not influencing the next plot point. The plot is already there; you're just discovering fragments of it. That's the difference. You're a vessel to explore and discover.
It's basically a weird situation where the plot is driven by you, the player, driving the pointless body through the space.
Guys, is this going to become another thesis on art is a lie, everything is an illusion, choice doesn't exist?
It's that really tough
conversation. Every episode.
It's that tough conversation of talking about a game character, an analog character, and then the player himself.
Well, I think that is the weird thing that this particular genre does well is you don't
have... Confuse the hell out of
us. To confuse the hell out of you. You're, like Max said, this empty body that's sort of just exploring an environment, and your action is not, you're not doing anything of significance, it's just there, you know? It's just there for you to kind of figure out.
That's one of the things I kind of like, I think, and this is why I'm glad we sort of got on this topic, because it applies to a lot of walking simulators, the question of character, analog, or player. Of like, does this game want to treat me the player as a character in the game, mm-hmm. or as simply an analog that is, you know, exploring its space, or does the game care about what decision I'm making?
Because
I feel like most walking simulators sort of apply to one of the three. You know, Stanley Parable is very much a player game, cares about what decision you're making space wise, mm-hmm. where you want to go. This is kind of somewhere in between. It doesn't really commit to any of them, which is where it's interesting. Maybe you're a character, maybe you're the player, maybe you don't matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about
it. If we get any emails, like, if anyone ever said before, like, you guys don't talk about art enough. Well, this is what it sounds like. Are you happy?
is this what you wanted, Kate? I'm calling you out.
Bitches better not step up if they're not ready to talk about art.
I think it is a very interesting conversation that, again, we have arrived at a very interesting point, because we have talked about previous mm-hmm. walking simulators that Dear Esther has very much influenced.
I mean, the same topic of conversation applies to The Static Is My Name.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
Here we go. Let's trudge up.
But you are right. You are right. I just don't want to talk about that game again.
That game is very underappreciated, you fuckers.
I will say this on air, because I only said it after we wrapped up the call when we record that episode. I went into that game very much hating it and walked out with a little better appreciation of it.
Okay.
So I will give you guys that. It is now on the air.
I actually appreciate it more after thinking of my idea of analog character or player.
Max is writing his own thesis right now.
Yeah, he'll put his paper in the Facebook group.
Yeah, yeah, guys, I'm getting ready. I'm going to start working on this paper now.
I mean, it's only a matter of time until we devolve into, like... Right. So if you want to check out our breakdown detailed thoughts, check out the Facebook group for our hypotheses.
And then they find a Google document with nothing uploaded into it.
Yeah. It's just the name of the game, and then just, like, three bullet points for each of us. Yeah. Blank. Yep.
All right. Well, that was a good... Guys, we did a great job. We don't pat ourselves on the back enough.
But... Oh, that's his footsteps.
I'm not patting myself on the back on air.
I'm patting the ground with my feet.
Okay. We've kind of did this, but I want to just sum it up in a sort of structured sense. Do we want to talk about what we think this will impact, like, how this influenced video games, what it did for the conversation of art?
I mean, it literally made walking simulators a thing.
Yeah, it made it hard to talk about.
It's hard to talk about something how it will influence when it already has. It's had a tremendous influence.
I think it set the right foundation for other games to iterate on it. You know, I don't think it was the walking simulator by any means, but the first one. But I think it did it so effectively that it again set the precedent for future.
Yeah, games. I wouldn't want to say it's the first one. I know there were an awful lot when we were younger, but I feel like from the best of my knowledge, this is like the first, like sort of kicked off the modern iterations of what walking simulators are today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, great job, everyone. I'm pretty sure we got no emails. I can't open it because last time I tried to do that, the Skype call. I couldn't hear you guys anymore, so I'm just going to have it in faith that we have nothing. If you check it,
there's like 37 emails.
Just this flux.
If you would like to send us an email of your thoughts on the game, game requests.
If you want to send us an email to tell us to stop playing walking simulators, you can do that.
This is probably the last one for a while.
Probably not.
Probably not. For a while. Yeah, okay, for a while, yes.
There's so many arty walking simulators.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. But anyway, send that all to critcrewpodcast@gmail.com. That's our email, and you can send us your stuff. Send it to that email, that's and we nice will jingle. Get your stuff Holy and shit. Read it on air.
Bop, bop, bop. I want a remix of this.
This is the trade-off, though. It's when you record early in the morning, David's kind of groggy, but you might get a song.
You might get a song.
Your morning jingle for the day.
Your morning.
You will certainly get less energy and more bass out of my voice. So there's that too.
It's the morning jingle cast.
Yep. So cool.
All right. Cool. Well. So guys,
what do we say when we get to this point?
Well, get in your vehicles, your collective vehicles. All right, do you have your loved one next to you?
Wait, are we outside? Are our vehicles next to us?
We're on an island right now.
Okay.
You ready to drive off a cliff with me?
How did you get this? Yep. Wait, how did I get this vehicle on this island?
Explain. Ask J.J. Abrams. I don't know.
Cool.
All right, let's drive off a cliff. This crit. Is adjourned.
Embrace the sweet void.
Embrace the end.